CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show today is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Letitia Diggs will be telling us a little bit about her work with Ataxia. So if you could introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your work with Ataxia.
My name is Letitia Diggs. I am the founder and the executive director, currently sitting for the Ataxia Association. For the African Americans with Ataxia Association. I've been in this space about 17 years now. I've been affected with ataxia by family members, as well as myself. So I'm pretty well versed in dealing with ataxia.
So for those who might not be as familiar, what are some of the common impacts of ataxia?
Common impacts would be to stumble when we walk. Well, that's the beginning of it, stumbling when we walk, and speech impediments. Sounding like you're drunk all the time.
So, how does the association reach out to those who could potentially benefit from having supports for the condition?
Well, for support, we rely on our Facebook group. Our Facebook group has over 300 members now. We really rely on the Facebook group to capture more members to deal with ataxia. We have membership in other countries as well as stateside.
So, do you ever find there are any myths or misperceptions about someone with ataxia?
Yes. The myths that come along with it are that we're drunk. This person has been drinking, and essentially they cannot have a drink at all. They can just have a taxi.
So, how do you go about combating those myths and stereotypes and letting people know that this is not a result of intoxication, this is the result of a condition?
Well, one thing I tend to do is to say, smell my breath. Does my breath smell like alcohol? To debunk the myth, it would really be, it depends on the persons and their personality, how they actually deal with the ramifications of saying that they're drunk or not.
So, can you give me an overview of some of the work of the association?
Well, the association right now, we target victims with, I keep saying victims, patients with ataxia, dealing with the different types of ataxia. There's Friedreich's ataxia, there's SEA1, SEA2, SEA3, which I have SEA3. It's called spinal cerebellar ataxia. Ataxia is a name that's given in short of dealing with this disability. What was your question again?
Yeah, I was just wondering about some of the supports the association provides.
We have monthly meetings, support group meetings. Some of our meetings are geared toward having specialists come and speak with us about ataxia, about the different things that we need to know in our life journeys. We have a physical therapist who comes on annually. She speaks to us about different physical therapies that are now available to us as patients with ataxia. She also showed us how to get up from falls that we may have with ataxia. We do have plenty of falls. We also have monthly meetings, support group meetings that are not recorded. Those are called open forum meetings, and these meetings are just what it says. It's an open forum for you to discuss anything dealing with ataxia or anything that you're dealing with on a personal level.
So, in your time with the association, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Well, we had a few success moments. Our first success moment was last year. We had a luncheon, so to speak, of well, it was more of a brunch type thing. It was a meeting of this group called Up To, and they met with us, and they actually had two of us to speak on ataxia. Well, there were three ataxia patients on the program. And we spoke about our different things that we deal with the ataxia. My main thing was dealing with sitting down doing chores every day. Everything has to be done from a seated position. Washing dishes, washing clothes. Everything has to be done while you see it, because you can no longer stand because of the atrophy of the muscles. And if anyone doesn't know what atrophy is actually the muscles becoming weak and dysfunctional.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
In this segment of our show,
Daniela Pathak will be telling us a little bit of her disability story. So what can you tell me about your disability story?
Well, I started having seizures after I got the vaccine. It's the measles vaccine. And my brain swelled. And then I had my first seizure and kept having seizures. And then around 7 years old or 6 years old, I started having 40 to 60 seizures a day. So I had a brain surgery that took out my short-term memory and a little bit of my speech area. And since then, the seizures haven't stopped, but they've gotten better.
So what are some of the coping mechanisms you've used since the surgery?
Since I was little, I actually always had a notebook with me. So around 13 years old, I started writing like in a journal. I haven't stopped. My faith helps me. And I had an experience with Holy Spirit early on, after my surgery. And it felt like there was a ball of the Holy Spirit like around me. Nothing could get in, get out. Like anything bad would just pass by me or something. I felt like I could kind of call it. I can conquer the world, and you could not take my smile away or my joy.
So recently, you attended Disabilities and Faith sort of summit meeting. Tell me a little bit about some of your takeaways from that.
Well, I know there's more people that want to share their story and want to have it better in the world and actually help people with disabilities and that don't have a voice. So that was very powerful, and I'm not alone with being one of the people that want to make the world better for people with disabilities and special needs.
So if you could see anything in particular added to the community as a support for persons with disabilities, just to make the world a brighter place, as it were, what would it be?
To give them hope and actually tell them that they can overcome anything if they put their mind to it. And they can have their dream job, they can overcome it. And that they're not alone.
So, in your own story, your own journey, has there been any success moment that stands out for you, where you were able to achieve or shatter some of the myths or misperceptions of disability life?
Yeah, I always go back to the high school and graduating high school because the kids, children's hospital, the doctors thought I would never pass high school and get a diploma. And then, plus I went into college, more college, for Community Integration Corporate Education, which is the CIC program. And I got A's and 90s, got on the dean's list. Actually, I actually helped one of the teachers. I will never forget Mr. Streicher's. He actually said, I think in grade 11, the teacher and parent teachers night interview, or I'll call it. She said that you have changed me looking at people with disabilities, and they can. I never thought a person with a disability could pass my, like, and go for my class and actually pass. So now he's more open to people with disabilities and special needs in his class, and now he's helping outside of class, which I've heard from a friend and my sister, which is amazing. And he's the only one that actually learned after 3 years how I actually learn and how I can pass a test.
So, go ahead.
And then plus Mohawk College, I got an Outstanding Achievement Award because I helped many of my friends in the program. And, yeah.
So, what are the next steps for you? What do you hope to achieve in the years ahead?
Well, I just got accepted into Seneca College, and I am doing the program library technician course because I want to be a librarian that does all those clubs and helps people, like, all ages.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Tune in to Indie Electric every Friday from 10:30 a.m. until noon, where you can hear a selection of the latest and greatest in independent rock and electronic music. Indie Electric, only here on 99.1 CJAM FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor and Detroit.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Daniela Pethick shared a little bit of her disability journey, and Letitia Diggs shared a little bit about ataxia. In this segment of our show, Heidi Edwards will be telling us about the Sisters Hope Foundation. So what can you tell me about the foundation?
So Sisters Hope Foundation was formed in 2020 because we had an urgent need to help patients dealing with a rare brain disease known as adult onset leukoencephalopathy with axonal spheroids and pigmented glia. And at the time I formed the foundation, it was becoming really clear that my two sisters were not going to survive the disease, and they were only in their mid-40s.
So,
we have a mission to support our patients financially. We help support with everything from medical supplies to food. The economy hasn't been really good in the last year, and some of our patients who are struggling because they have lost income due to one of the partners being sick, they ask us for extra assistance with food, supplies, medical equipment, helping with reimbursement for medical expenses for the disease, things like that. So because it is our mission to provide the support for those patients, if we are able to, we do help them.
So how does the condition typically affect a person?
So what happens is, and what we're finding as we learn more about the disease is really the the disease can start at any time. We have children as young as 1 year old with symptoms. We have patients in their 80s that are just starting to be symptomatic. There's no, right now there's no rhyme or reason to what's happening with this disease. And typically what you will experience early on are psychiatric and behavioral issues. Then it will lead to, in some patients, difficulty with movement. In others, they may lose the ability to speak. Eventually, they may, not all patients, but some will develop seizures and definitely cognitive decline along the way, but more of the dementia symptoms near the end of life. But cognitive decline will start fairly early in the disease process as well for most people.
So, how does the foundation go about reaching out to those who could benefit from your supports?
So, as far as reaching out to patients, we're an ultra-rare disease right now, so it's really difficult to find the patients. They may be misdiagnosed, so they do not know they're living with ALSP. They could be in a stroke clinic. They may be in a behavioral health center. They could be monitored for MS. But then once the disease starts to rapidly progress, which it will, that's when the doctors realize something isn't right with the diagnosis. And as long as they have genetic testing, the right genetic testing to confirm the CSF1R mutation, which causes ALSP, that's when you can identify that you're definitely dealing with this disease. Most of the time, patients, there's no sure way to find the patients for us as a foundation. They're coming to us. So we can only have all the available resources online, social media. People find us through all avenues of social media. So we try to do our best to raise awareness so people know what to look for and know that we are there to help them.
So when you say it's an ultra-rare condition, do you know offhand about how many people are affected?
So at the moment, we've only identified around a couple hundred patients, maybe, you know, around 300 patients in the world with this condition. In the United States, we are finding slowly that more and more people are getting tested and diagnosed. One of the issues that we are trying to deal with is the fact that doctors do not all of them will schedule genetic testing, and not all believe they should do genetic testing. Well, in this situation, with a disease like ALSP, your course is so rapid once the symptoms start, and in order to confirm that you have the disease, you have to do genetic testing, and it will rule it in or out. You'll know that you have it, or you'll know definitely you do not have it. And that is so important because we do have a phase 2 clinical trial with Vigil Neuroscience, but there's inclusion and exclusion criteria. Yeah, and if you're too far progressed, you will not be included in the clinical trial. If you are too far progressed, you may not survive a bone marrow transplant, or you may survive with no quality of life.
So, in your time with the foundation, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
One specific success story? So, we have a few successes in our community. You know, we have a patient who underwent the bone marrow transplant early on in the disease. That patient lives with deficits every day. It by no means did it make that person better, but it saved their life, and they're able to function and continue working. But with that being said, there are deficits, and it's a struggle every day. You will not go back to who you were before the bone marrow transplant. It will stop the disease from progressing. And we don't even know for how long at this point. We don't have enough data to show if the disease will stop progressing for 1 year, 2 year, 5 years. And we don't even know at this point if it will stop the progression in every patient. We do have a patient who had the bone marrow transplant, and then soon after, where the disease had stopped progressing, it started progressing again. I would say another success story would be someone who found out that they carried the mutation, and as soon as symptoms began, because they were part of the natural history study with Vigil Neuroscience, they were moved over into the clinical trial. That's a really positive example, because that will show if the drug is working early in the disease course. So that's a win, definitely.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
For a condition like ataxia, that can mimic the appearance of intoxication, living with the myths and misperceptions that come with that can be especially difficult. It's not something a person can control. It's not a choice they made to go out and abuse their body or put foreign substance in it. It is simply a matter of the way their brain and body work. And honestly, people should keep more of an open mind. I can imagine the stigma and the shame that come with being stopped by someone who assumes that you're intoxicated and asks questions related to that. A person shouldn't have to live with explaining, this is my condition, this is part of who I am. The weight of that can be very difficult thing. And even after the explanation, it's important that the person who's informed keeps an open mind. They continue to grow in their disability understanding journey. That they not assume the next time around. They ask the question, am I familiar with this situation? Or am I only taking a first glance look at it? The important thing in disability life, no matter the condition, is always to take a closer look, gain a greater understanding. Yes, there's the model that we're all familiar with. We hear a condition such as autism, for example. We assume, based on the things that we've seen, read, and heard, that we understand what that means. But, as someone who once did an interview for the show once observed, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. Unless you understand the condition yourself, firsthand, that is to say, living with it yourself or getting to know someone affected by the situation, don't go around making those assumptions. Because honestly, folks, we don't know what we don't know. And our understanding today is not our understanding 5 years from now. Hopefully, with time, patience, open minds, and open hearts, we'll continue to grow and understand one another. For the fact is, none of us wants to find ourselves in a situation where we're denied support, we're subject to myths or ridicule, simply because our condition looks like one thing, when in fact, it may be something completely else. No one should ever be made to feel less than or ashamed of their condition. The fact is, it's not a matter of how we see, hear, think, or move. It is a matter of our rights as human beings to be counted, to be included in the community, to say, my life matters, I'm part of this community. It may be easier to look at my condition and think we know everything, rather than take the time to get to know me. It is always a matter of people looking at the person, not just the condition. Honestly, it's through communication that we all grow. That being said, persons with disabilities are their own best advocates. An idea, unchallenged, never grows, simply stagnates. Let's look beyond that, folks. Let's grow in our wisdom. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.